And I would like to hear some people give answers to what is a holy jhana. And you can write, if you want, in your book, what is a holy dharma? That is the question. Any answers? Yes.
Holy dharma is a place where the deity resides and the deity is worshipped.
Place where the deity resides and the deity is worshipped. Yes. Yes, that's another one. Yeah. Place where Krishna has his pastimes. Any more?
Place where one can go to hear from the body of the Lord.
Yes, the place where one can go to hear from a pure devotee of the Lord. Not of this material world. Yes. Any more answers? Place where one can immediately contact the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Which one? Yes, place where saintly person has resided. Any more? Yes, a place where devotees are chanting Hare Krishna. Place where there is a spirit of service to Krishna. Any more? Yes.
A place where you get peace.
Yes. Place. Recited. Okay. The place where Srimad Bhagavatam is narrated or recited. Yes? Ah, very good one. Thank you. The heart of the pure devotee. Yes? Any more? Anywhere where Srila Prabhupada resides. Yes. Any more? Anywhere appeared or worshipped. Okay. Anywhere where the form of the Lord is worshipped or put. He appears. Okay. Yes. So appearance means he's worshipped in a bona fide form. Anymore? Place of shelter from the material world. Is that it? We have any more?
where the Lord speaks. Yeah. Okay. So, any more? If not, we'll stop here. Okay, so we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. And these are all correct. Now, I thought through this before coming, the same question, and I think my classifications will not be different than yours, although mine are a little more formalized. So you can listen, and we'll see if they fit together well. The first one that I had is a primary holy place is a place of the Lord's appearance in past times. Primary holy place. Another very and a good example for us is Mathura Vrindavan, Navadvip Mayapur, and Jagannath Puri, Dwarka. Dwarka is listed in this classical. Jagannath Puri, a little different. Jagannath Puri comes into the next one. The next one is a place where there is a great temple, very classic, powerful deities. And Jagannath Puri is that. Jagannath Puri is unique because Jagannath Puri comes into the Leela of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu alongside the fact that Lord Jagannath's worship has gone on there for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. So there's a special aspect to Jagannath Puri that we will discuss later. So, the first is where the Lord's appearance, another place like that, they say, is Ayodhya. I'm not Ayodhya. What's it called, Lord Nrisimhadev's place? Ahovalam. Ayodhya is one. A place where he appears and the Leela takes place. Those ones are limited insofar as there's only a certain amount of them. And they're scattered throughout, mostly throughout India. Although it's said in different places that they're scattered throughout the universe. And the temples, the greatly famous classical temples. Can anyone think of another good example? Jai Shri must know one. Srirangam, Tirupati, Balaji, Venkateshwar. These are all names of places where everybody, more or less, who knows anything about India, you know, little details here and there, has heard of these places. Jagannath Puri, and there are others. Because there are not only we are fond of the Vishnu worship, there's Rameshwaram, so many places of Lord Shiva's worship, there's so many places of the worship of Durga Devi, Vaishnavi Devi, a huge temple, it's very famous, and so many people you meet in India as you're traveling on the trains say, oh, have you been to see this temple? This is like their icon, these temples. So there's many places like that. They're all places of pilgrimage or dhams. Then I wrote down a place where great spiritualists once lived or enacted pastimes. Can anyone think of an example of a place like that? Not exactly. That Kurukshetra comes into the one that was mentioned about where Krishna speaks. Namasharanya comes into the many sages met there. An example I can give you that came to my mind, I couldn't think of a lot that we're all familiar with, is Shantipur. Advaita Acharya stayed there. When you go to Mayapur, there's so many places like that. Shiva Sangam, the Yoga Peak, and so forth. But of course, these personalities that we're talking about now are Panchatattva, so they're a little different again. They're all divinity. But if you go around in what is known as Navadvip Mandal, like we have Braj Mandal, Braj Mandal means the greater area. There's Vrindavan, the village, for those who've not been there. And then the greater area of the region all around is called Braj Mandala. Mandala means like a circle, the area surrounding. So there's also Navadvip. In the middle of Navadvip is Mayapur, like a lotus with a central whirl. And the area all around that is called Navadvip Mandala. And in that area, there are so many what are called Sripats. And these Sripats are the places of all the associates of Lord Chaitanya, the great devotees. There's a place called Jajigram, which is only, I think, maybe an hour away from Navadvip, where Srinivasacharya lived. There's a place where this person, that person, so on and so on, all these different personalities live. But because we may not be so familiar with these people, they may not seem to be so relevant to our frame of reference. But there are many. And also you see in the Christian, there are the places of Lord Jesus, where he lived, where his followers lived. In Muslim religion, there's Muhammad's places. So this is common. And we hear about Lord Chaitanya when he found out where the birthplace of Ishwara Puri was, the spiritual master. He took dust from that place and he carried that with him because that was a sacred place. So that's a type of sacred place has been mentioned here. It is the places where pure devotees live, places where saintly persons have resided, that was mentioned. Then there's places where great saintly people either died, they left this world, or they performed some particular function, like Namashiranya, they met and they were meeting and discussing. They have some significance. Nobody, not that that place was always, always, always going on eternally in a spiritual way, but something very significant happened there. And so that place becomes known. We would not say in the primary place, but almost as a holy place. Can anyone think of any like that? Kurukshetra? Yes. 26 Second Avenue. That comes a little later, but it's also true. Yes, definitely. Jagannath Puri, it has a touch of that. Jagannath Puri, I would say not Jagannath Puri as a whole, because Jagannath Puri is already a place of a great famous temple. It's already a place of so many things centered around Lord Jagannath. That's its primary characteristic. Secondarily, because it's a place of Lord Jagannath, you'll see that around Jagannath Puri so many great devotees resided and performed so many different activities which made this place or that place striking. Raymuna, yes. Yes, a very good one. Another one is a place called Gopi Balavpur, which is on the border of Bengal and Orissa, where Rasikanand lived. Nobody's ever heard of it because it was not a specifically holy place, except that he advented there. He appeared near there, but he had a temple there and he performed some activities there, and it became known to the Aryan people. Raymuna is a good one. Alright. Prayag is very old. Prayag is on a level with Mathura and other places. They go through yugas and yugas and yugas as being Prayag. So they're classical. They've gone to a higher category. Yes. Varanasi, same. Calcutta, from our sentiment here, because we will think Prabhupada like 26 Second Avenue, for us, has become sacred, the places of Srila Prabhupada's activities. Yeah. But these places, the significance is that not everybody recognizes them. In other words, those who are followers of Narottam Das Thakur, those who are followers of Srila Prabhupada, they will go there and say this is a very holy place, and many other people will not recognize them so strongly. The places like Vrindavan, the very, very big ones, they're more widespread in their fame. Then I put this, my next one, places where devotees assemble and deities are served. So many of these had this spirit, many of the things that you spoke of. And beside that, I put our temple, to be very precise, the temple, wherever we are. Our ISKCON temple, our temple, meaning whatever place that we are in a formally way worshipping, that is in this category. Then, more simple than that, places where the Lord is worshipped in a more general way, meaning even our own home. There's the temple where the worship is formal, there's the home where the worship is more informal. And the last one I put was places where the Lord is asked to reside and purify. And that is ourselves, the heart. These are very similar to the ones here we had. The heart of the pure devotee. We had. I'll read the ones we had again. You see the similarity. Places where Krishna had his pastimes. Places that are not of this material world. Places where one can immediately contact the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Places where the Lord speaks philosophically. Places where a deity resides or deity worship is going on. Places where one can go to hear from a pure devotee of the Lord. Places where saintly persons have resided. Places where devotees are chanting Hare Krishna. It's coming closer to us also. Places where there is a spirit of service to Krishna, that also is very real to us. Places where you get peace. So we can say there are different kinds of peace. There's a kind of peace that you just want peace, you know, you just want everything to stop so you can be peaceful. But this kind of peace is not the same as the kind of peace that one gets when one develops a mood of service. One may feel superficially, I don't have any peace now. I used to be very peaceful. It was a very quiet life, and now I'm so stressed with so many things. But if one proceeds through that process, one can attain a very high level of peace. A superficial level of peace means that things are peaceful right now. My mind is peaceful. I feel very peaceful. A deep level of peace, Srila Prabhupada one time he said, do you know why the Pacific Ocean is so peaceful? He was looking and commenting how the water, we're walking along the beach and we don't expect the waves to come and the waves stay there, we walk here. Why it is so peaceful? Does anyone know what his answer was? Because it's very deep. So there's a deep kind of peace. And this deep kind of peace is the response of Krishna from within the heart to a devotee who is trying to become eligible to make his heart into a residence for the Lord. Then we had a place where the Srimad Bhagavatam is recited, the heart of a pure devotee, anywhere where Srila Prabhupada resides, anywhere where a form of the Lord has appeared and is worshipped, and a place, this is the definition of a dham, a place of shelter from the material world. Now, I'm going to give you a couple of minutes and I want you to write something about that, of the Lord's pastimes. So now this is interesting. It says, Vedic scriptures tell us that one can reduce the reactions to his past sinful activities by visiting a dham and bathing in the holy waters there. So reduce the reactions to his past sinful activities. Here's a function that we didn't write down, isn't it? A dham is a place where one can reduce the reactions to his past sinful activities. Okay. But the importance of a dham goes beyond the ritual bathing in the holy waters. If one wants to get the full benefit of the dham, he should hear spiritual topics from the self-realized souls who reside there. Srimad Bhagavatam says that if one travels to a dham just to bathe but neglects to hear from realized persons, he is no better than a cow or an ass. So here we are given instruction. If you go to a dham, you must find somebody there who is learned and you must hear something from them. Why? Yes, they can reveal the dham to you. Good point. Anything else? Of course, not different than that. Any other aspects of that? Revealing the dham, what else can they do? Or what else is? You can contact Krishna through them, through their association. And how do we do that? Do they take us by the hand and say, come, I'll take you to go and see Krishna, and then knock on his door and take us there? Through submissively hearing from them. That means we have to have a mood of eagerness. I want to hear something about Krishna. I must admit I had a funny experience one time. I was, it was in a certain period of time in the history of the society, and somebody said to me, you know, you shouldn't speak so much about Radha and Krishna and all of these subjects. You should just keep everything, just keep it on the basic subjects. So I took a group of devotees with me for a parikrama, and we went to Radhakund. And we sat there, and I said, this is Radhakund? This is Shyamakund. Sat there for a while. I didn't know, what am I going to say there? And so we did naturally quite easily went into explaining about Radha and Krishna and their pastimes together. And I thought of it on the way back, and I thought it was totally natural in that place where Radha and Krishna's pastimes took place to talk about them. But if you come to an ordinary place or a situation where that isn't the conducive element, and you force this in to a situation where other things are going on, you have to be very careful, because if you impact too strongly and the persons who you're speaking to don't have the requisite understanding of the loving affairs of Radha and Krishna, then they're bound to make a mistake and think, oh, I like this very much, tell me more, or I don't like this very much, don't tell me about this, because they don't actually have the preparatory work done. So I thought this is a very special gift of the Dharma. You go to the Dharma and anyone, no matter who they are, you go there, you speak, and the atmosphere will support you. And it will protect you also. It won't make your mind confused. If you go there the right way, you will receive Krishna's mercy in this way, in the Dharma. So this is a very important point, that they will reveal the Dharma. If you speak to people who know the Dharma, they will reveal the Dharma. And you can contact Krishna through their association, through hearing. Now, at the bottom here, the last paragraph, it says, in the broader sense, any place connected with Lord Krishna or his devotees is a dharma. This is what we have been saying. Thus, the many temples of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness are also dharmas. And anyone who wants spiritual purification cannot travel to India can take advantage of them. Now I'm going to ask a heavy question. What do we, as members of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, have to present to the public more of or less of to make the society potent as a dharma? What does there have to be more of? What does there have to be less of? Yes. More purity. Yes? Yes.
More Krishna consciousness.
More Krishna consciousness. More prasadam distribution.
More cooperation.
More prasadam distribution.
More laziness.
Huh?
Less mess.
Less mess. Okay, on the less side. Less mess. Yes, cleanliness.
More love.
More love. Yeah, more love. I remember one time Srila Prabhupada got a letter from somebody. It was a girl, and she met some devotees in the street. And she talked to them, and she didn't find them very loving. And this was in the mid-70s. So she wrote to Prabhupada. She was just someone on the street. She said, I met your people. They gave me a book, but they didn't seem very loving. And Srila Prabhupada wrote back a very interesting letter where he explained that they may not seem very loving at this time because they're in the beginning stages. They're not mature yet. So because they're not mature yet, they may even have some temptation, because she's probably a pretty young girl and she needs some brahmachari and not very loving. So he made the point that they may even have material attractions still. So because of these material attractions, they put up artificial barriers that makes them seem very stiff and uncomfortable. So you may not find them very loving. And he asked her in the letter, he apologized on their behalf and asked her to forgive them for that, because he explained that the fact was that they were not mature. So when we say more love, we are absolutely correct, because throughout everything that we're reading, we'll see that we need more love. But the primary thing is we have to learn, first of all, to understand how to love Krishna if you want love to spread in every direction. Just like every one of us here has a different father. And because we all have different fathers, you can say we come from different families. But if we were all sitting here and we had the same father, then we would be part of the same family. And the reality is, we do have the same father. But unless we come to an understanding of that, then it is very difficult, almost impossible, to understand how we actually exist within one family. So this is not to minimize the fact that more love is required, but it's to put it in a perspective so that we can't say, today or tomorrow, I want this to appear, because it will appear if we continue and we continue to act properly. It will come. This is what will come. I've got more purity, more Krishna consciousness, more cooperation, more prasadam distribution, more love. Can anyone think of any more? More acceptance. Acceptance of what? That's not necessarily a spiritual principle. We'll leave that one for later. We'll speak about that one in a different context. I can think of one, more distribution of spiritual knowledge. That we have to give what we have, because we have this. We have spiritual knowledge and we have to actually give it. More kirtan. More kirtan. More prayer. Okay, so now, what we've got here, we have more purity, more Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness, of course, encompasses everything. Then we have more kirtan and more prayer.
Well, I meant with Krishna consciousness was putting Krishna in the center, not ourselves.
Okay.
Krishna consciousness rather than
okay.
self-consciousness.
All right, okay. And what I think, in terms of what Jayashree is saying, it's also in the level of a result. As a result of this, you get this. Because if you have more acceptance, this will come up later. What is primary spiritual and secondary spiritual? Primary spiritual means this spiritual activity yields a direct spiritual result. And this particular phenomena yields a spiritual result if you dovetail it. If you don't dovetail it, it yields a result for anyone of any kind. So we'll need to discuss this. We'll discuss this tomorrow because it's a really important point. Because then we'll begin to see that if we want more of the things that we see on the level of social requirements that are essential to be there, we may think, therefore, we have to work on these things. But we discover that, no, if you want those things, you have to work on these things because these are results. This is the essence and this is the result. And it will follow from the essence. Because otherwise, it becomes difficult. Because we think, I cannot work on the essence until these things are here. But we can. We're not bound like that. We're actually free to continue. To continue to grow. So here are some things that we've decided that, in order to be a potent dharma, so that people can get spiritual purification who cannot travel to India, we need more of these things and less mess.
Less offenses.
Less offenses.
More cooperation.
We've got that. We have. We've got that on the other side. We're on the less mess.
Less criticism.
Less criticism.
More.
That's on the more side. We're on the less side right now. That goes on the other side. That's more culture. Spiritual culture. Okay, so we're not going to get stuck here because that only is a part of what we're speaking about. We're going to go on to the classical holy dharmas and not stay so long on these other internal regions, the heart and the dharma and the temple. That will have to trickle down to us from our appreciation and understanding of the greater subject. Now, have a quick look, and then we'll take a break after this, by the way, on the value of visiting the Dham. This is a quote from the 10th canto. This is not Srila Prabhupada's purport here. This is from the very, very end of the 10th canto. Putting aside the affectionate company of wives, children, friends, and followers, saintly Vaishnavas travel to the holy dhams where the Supreme Lord's worship can be most successfully prosecuted. That's interesting. There's another one. Places where the Lord's worship can be most successfully prosecuted. Places such as Vrindavan, Mayapur, and Jagannath Puri, or anywhere else where sincere devotees of Lord Vishnu congregate. So where there are sincere devotees, you can be most successful. Even those Vaishnavas who have not taken sannyas and still live at home or in their guru's ashram, but who have once tasted just a drop of the sublime pleasure of devotional service, will also have little inclination to meditate on the pleasures of a materialistic family life, which robs a person of, and I'm sure you found some things to underline, I found these ones, that robs a person of his discretion, determination, sobriety, tolerance, and peace of mind. Now, this is a very a valued list of things that one becomes robbed of when one takes up the pleasures of materialistic family life. So this does this mean then, the question can arise in the mind, that we shouldn't have anything to do with family life? No, it doesn't mean that. It speaks about those who have little inclination to meditate on these pleasures. They may even have to maintain a materialistic family, because in this day and age, it's not like in the olden Vedic times where the children were obedient to the parents and there was a whole structure of society around you to support your ethical, spiritual, moral values. We have to deal with modern Western culture. So one may have to do so many, have so many responsibilities, but they have little inclination to meditate on the pleasures. It means that they accept these things as a duty and responsibility, and they do the best they can with them. This is a result, it says here, of somebody actually gaining a taste from the visit to the Dham. Now the last of these three quotes. It's called Live Here for Devotional Life. This one I put in because I thought it was funny. I don't mean that to be disrespectful. But the last sentence is really the whole reason I put it in. We can look at the last sentence first. Prabhupada says, unless one is very advanced in spiritual life, it is recommended that he live in such holy places and execute devotional service there. Now, why I thought that was funny was because I think unless one is very advanced in life, he should not live in such holy places and execute devotional service there. It would be too hard. Better to live somewhere and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And here Srila Prabhupada, from his perspective, is turning it around and saying, if you're not very advanced, you should live in a holy place, a holy dham. So we can translate this, Prabhupada is speaking here, of many holy places in India, Badri Narayan, Dwarka, Rameshwaram, Jagannath Puri, four main dhams, where you can immediately contact the Supreme Lord. Somebody very nicely said that on the list of what is a dham. A place where one can immediately contact the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So here, Prabhupada says at the start, places of pilgrimage yield a special advantage for a devotee in quickly advancing his spiritual life. Lord Krishna lives everywhere, but still it is very easy to approach him in holy places of pilgrimage. That's the beginning. And the bottom is, unless you're very advanced, you should live in one of those holy places. Yes?
To go to Badrinath.
Yes. Yes, it's Badrinath. Yep. So I thought, actually I was thinking of myself again as my example for this was that the first time I went to India was in 1974, and we had been sort of prompted by Srila Prabhupada to go because he had come and seen how we were doing in Hong Kong and he wasn't very impressed. And so he wanted us to kind of revive the spark that once was there. And so he encouraged us to please come because we're having our first Mayapur Vrindavan festival, or Purnima, official. I think the first one was in 1972, but the first one inviting the whole society was in 1974. So he dropped little hints in a very gentlemanly way that it would be very nice, it would be very nice to see you there, it would be very nice if you could bring some. So we took it up. We understood what he was saying, and we agreed to go. And I was a little bit holding back at that point, but anyway, we were going. So we collected together some Chinese devotees, which was quite astonishing because there was no such thought in people's minds that Chinese people could become devotees at that time. And about seven of us left and we went to India. And as soon as we got there, even Hong Kong, which was uncomfortable in different ways, was still quite comfortable, like something like a standard that we would be used to. But when we got to India, everything kind of seemed to go wrong. And this was the very beginning of Westerners coming, and we made it somehow or other to Mayapur, although the plane was in difficulty and the airport was in difficulty. And immediately we got off the plane, I developed a kind of a severe case of culture shock because I'd never been in such an atmosphere. And we got to Mayapur, and the Mayapur temple at that time, this is not to frighten those who've never been because it's not like that now, was only one building, and that building also wasn't finished. And Srila Prabhupada, because he wanted this, he wanted to establish something, he was callous to the inconveniences of the people involved. So much so that he would glorify their good fortune for being there. So all the ladies that had the good fortune to come to that festival were all crowded in one room, which was about a quarter of the size of this. And they hadn't even finished the cement floor. They hadn't put down the final layer of cement. So it was just rough cement with cement powder all over you. And because nobody knew anything about India, we all had been told you have to get mosquito nets. And we tied them all together. And so there were mosquito nets, or the whole room was basically one block of mosquito nets. And I didn't know about mosquito nets, and somebody said, oh, well, you can borrow mine, because I didn't know. And we were crowding under mosquito nets and getting bitten all night because, well, a mosquito net takes only one person. If you go too close to the edge, the mosquitoes can bite you through it. And it was so uncomfortable, and Srila Prabhupada's sister was there, and she was very, very elderly, and she was set up right in the corner, and she was very exalted, but she was also very eccentric. She didn't speak any English, and she would walk out in the morning, and she would only wear a slip, or sometimes she'd only wear a gamcha, and she was very, very old, and her upper body, it looked like she had, you know, sometimes describes about string beans. She looked like that. She was so old and elderly and venerable. But she would march down the corridor and round to the ladies' bathroom like this. And this, of course, upset all of the men who saw this elderly lady walking around just in a gamcha. And there were so many things like that, so many cultural things. One day, 2 days, 3 days, only potatoes, nothing else. That was all they grew. It was potatoes for lunch, potatoes, potatoes, potatoes. Then came eggplant, only eggplant. Everyone's getting sick. Nobody knows how to deal with diarrhea and this and that. Outside there was a hand pump, and then you're drinking the water, and they tell you, don't drink that water, that water's all. And it was so many things. So all the time I was there, I was on edge. And I was just thinking, when can I get out of this place? And I also, as soon as we got there, they made an announcement, no women should be seen with any men. Because we didn't understand the culture at the time, but because of the Gaudiya Math, who was Srila Prabhupada's mother mission that he was part of, and they were very critical. Look at these Westerners seen together doing this, doing that. So we were given very rigorous instructions, and we didn't really have any cultural position to understand any of this. So actually I thought, this is actually quite a nightmare. So when we got back onto the bus and we drove to Calcutta, I thought, oh, I'm so glad I'm out of that place. And I felt very guilty, but that was how I felt. So then I got to Calcutta and I was sitting in the train station to go to Vrindavan, and I felt so disheartened because I'd come all the way here, heard about this and it had been such a disaster. So I thought, now I'm going to Vrindavan. And I thought, Vrindavan, oh Vrindavan, I've read the Krishna book and all the Krishna pastimes, they take place in Vrindavan. So I decided that I didn't want another disaster on my hands. And so all the way we were going overnight on a train to Vrindavan, where they had hired two carriages for all the devotees, I decided I would just read and read Krishna book and not even look and talk to anyone because I was so disheartened. So I just sat with my Krishna book and I read and I read and I read. And when we got to Vrindavan, I was so much better prepared. And so we got out at the station and the Tongas came to take us to Vrindavan. And we stayed at Fogal Ashram, which now when Radhanath Swami comes and brings thousands and thousands of devotees, he occupies the whole of a vast area, which is known as Fogal Ashram. At that time it was a very small ashram, just about a 5 minute most walk from where the Krishna Balaram Mandir is being built. So we all stayed there. Some people didn't come, it was too much for them, they had finished with their trip to India. And so there were less people, less hectic, less tension. There was a town around you. Instead of, we were stood out as a beacon that everyone is looking at and seeing us and pointing to us. And I found it was very easy to relax into the atmosphere of Vrindavan. Peacocks walking in the morning down the road. We would make our way down the road to where the Krishna Balaram Mandir was being built. And Srila Prabhupada was staying in his rooms, which were not even finished. And sometimes, I remember, it might have been in the evening, but sometimes we would go, as a group, we would go to other places of pilgrimage, and we'd come back and we'd go into his room. And when we would go into his room, he would talk to everyone together and try to encourage us in general in our Krishna consciousness. And, of course, everyone was on the way back to somewhere else in the world and give everybody some spiritual strength to return to their places. So he had spoken to my husband and told my husband, he had been very upset with us because we had been very flighty and not very settled in Hong Kong, and he had explained his desire that we should be there and become strong and steady. And so we were about to return. And then I was thinking it was so much of a relief in Vrindavan, just circumstantially, because the next time I went to Mayapur I had a completely different and a wonderful experience. But it was such a relief in Vrindavan that I wanted to say thank you to Srila Prabhupada before we left. So we went to his house, where his house is now, and I can't actually geographically picture where he was sitting because the temple was not finished and there was no guest house at that time. It was only just this area. So he was sitting in a fenced-off area. They had some rope and some bamboos in the ground. We came around the front, to the front of where his room is now, and we asked his servant, can we go and see Srila Prabhupada? And he said, no, it's not proper. He's taking his massage right now. He's only in his gamcha. It's not appropriate for you and your wife to go and see him now. So I felt a little peeved at that, a little annoyed, because in Hong Kong, when he had come there to spend some time with us, we had seen him a couple of times in his gamcha. Wasn't something that was that he considered inappropriate. So I was about to become all verbal and offended. And my husband said, don't worry, just come. So we walked around the back where he was, respectfully disregarding his servant, and we just ducked under the little piece of rope, and we came over to where Srila Prabhupada was sitting. And he was sitting there, and he was so much at home. He was just sitting there in the sun. So we came and we paid our obeisances. As soon as we put our heads up, he said, and I don't know if he said it to me, but I answered. He said, so, how do you like Vrindavan? And without a second, I went cutting off my husband and everything, I said, oh, it's a wonderful Prabhupada. And he went just as quickly back and said, then you should come and live here. And then I burst out laughing and I said, you just sent us back to Hong Kong. You know, like, what is this? You know, you're just now saying come and live here. You just now said do this. Now you're saying this. So I caught him because he was very clever. And he recognized in a very gentleman way that he'd been caught. And so he altered his voice and he said, then you should come and live here for some months every year. He made a compromise because it was true. You know, he had just told us you must go back there and stay there. Now you should come here. So he said like this. So we then spoke to him a little longer, and then we had to duck under the fence again. And we snuck off and we went back to Hong Kong. But I always remembered that when he said, "How do you like this place?" It was so natural to say, "This is, it's so nice." And it was so it was so natural for him to say, "Then come and live here." So when I think of this down here where Prabhupada says, unless one is very advanced in spiritual life, it is recommended that he live in such a holy place and execute devotional service there. This was definitely a sentiment of his. But, as he said to us, it wasn't the only sentiment. Srila Prabhupada would say this, and then he would say that. And some, one person would catch this, and one person would catch that. But if you didn't understand that he said both, you didn't have the full picture. You had to understand both. Simultaneously, he said both. And then, with your intelligence, you had to work out a reconciliation between these two things. Just as we were reading with the prayers of Queen Kunti, when he said, Kunti Devi is praying, "Cut off my affection for my family." And Prabhupada is saying, you cannot cut off affection. It's a natural human thing. But then later on he's saying that this affection is merely sense gratification and it should be given up. So is he saying this? Is he saying that? He's saying both. He's saying both. So we have to become actually capable of seeing in this way that he's saying both. And what is the adjoining factor that brings a harmony? It is this mood, as he said, of trying to serve Krishna. So 9 years later, we came to live in Vrindavan, unexpectedly by myself again, but it was centered around service, that there was a need of some service. My husband took up that position, and so we found ourselves in Vrindavan. And the whole time we were there, it was always based on some service that had to be done. It wasn't based on, I feel like it, it would be a really good thing to do this, I want to do this next, I want to do that next. Because with that mood, you cannot actually enter the Dharma. We read that, right? Two things that were required, what were they? Not with the Dharma, but with the Bhagavatam. What were the two things that were required? Sincere service and submissive inquiry. This applies to all these processes of bhakti. If you try and hold the reins in your own hands, you can't get anywhere. You have to give the reins to Krishna. And this is how one actually makes advancement. You have to say, "I would like to do this. What do you want me to do?" And in that mood, one makes steady advancement, regardless of what difficulties and obstacles fall on the way. Now, I'd like to give you all a break. Then we're going to come back, and I want to talk about another subject related to the Dharma. I want to talk about the different Dharma relationship of the different locations in the spiritual world. I've drawn a very funny little picture here, and I'll explain that to you when we come back.